This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Everything strange. Everything wild. Once a week, go a little night. Join us on Sci-Fi and Squeak on Joy 94.9.
They might just kill her for you.
This is Sonia, and this is Sci-Fi and Squeam, only on Joy 94.9. And we're talking about something on fire, catching fire. It's the sequel to The Hunger Games. The first installment was just called The Hunger Games, but this is The Hunger Games, A Catching Fire. It's part two of the American sci-fi adventure film that is based on the books by Suzanne Collins' novel. Catching Fire is the second installment of the trilogy, The Hunger Games. Now, of course, being the sequel to The Hunger Games that came out only last year in 2012, back in April and May 2012, we're looking at a film that, again, a lot of anticipation. Again, a lot of people thinking, this could be disappointing. As most of us did, I pretty much think, with The Hunger Games, the first installment, the first cinematic release. Now, this one is directed, Catching Fire, by director Francis Lawrence, the Austrian director, by origin that is, of things like I Am Legend, which was in 2007, and earlier on, Constantine, which was 2005. Quite a nice film, that one, indeed. So, of course, he did Water for Elephants, so he has worked with a sparkly ex-sparkly vampire, but here he is doing The Hunger Games, Catching Fire for 2013. Now, it's produced by Nina Jacobson and John Killick. The screenplay is by Simon Beaufoy, Michael Arndt, and, of course, Suzanne Collins was involved in that, thank goodness, and is based on her book. It stars, of course, the incredibly dynamic and highly flexible and energetic Jennifer Lawrence, aka J-Law. It has the wonderful same-sex equality advocate Josh Hutchinson returning, of course, and Liam Hemsworth does appear in it a little bit more, and Woody Harrelson is back, Elizabeth Banks is delightful and back again, and Lenny Kravitz is Sinner. Newcomers is Philip Seymour Hoffman and Jeffrey Wright. Now they are fabulous, and Stanley Tucci does return, along with the ever-oppressive and maniacal Donald Sutherland. Music is by the wonderful James Newton Howard. Cinematography by Joe Willems. Editing by Alan Edward Bell. And the studio this time is Colourforce, distributed by Lionsgate. It's out for Roadshow Australia. And it starts November the 21st. Is the release date across Oz. Jennifer Lawrence returns as Katniss Everdeen, Josh as Peter Amalark, her cohort, her companion, and the fellow Victor Tribute. Now, of course, Liam Hemsworth is the spunky and irrepressible Gale Hawthorne. Woody Harrelson as Haymitch Abernathy, the constant drunk, of course. Elizabeth Banks is fantastic this time, given a lot more weight, a lot more screen time, which is wonderful, as Effie Trinket. And Lenny Kravitz as Sinner, as I mentioned before. With Philip Seymour Hoffman underplaying a very minor role, but still quite hefty and important, as Plutarch Heavensby. Jeffrey Wright as B.T., Tucci is Caesar Flickerman. Donald Sutherland, of course, as the evil and ominous President Snow, with Toby Jones, a very tiny, small appearance, of course. We have Sam Claflin appearing as the spunky and rather, you know, macho Finnick Adair. And Gina Maloney almost steals everything as Johanna Mason. Amanda Plummer as Wyrus. So brilliant as she is, she's always close to the edge of complete hysteria, that actress, and she does it incredibly well, with Lo Shields as Prim Everdeen, the young sister of Katniss Everdeen. Now let's get to the plot, shall we, for Catching Fire. Now, if you haven't seen the first film or you've not read the books, pretty much it's the 74th Hunger Games. It's been and done. Katniss and Peter survived. And of course, they go and return home to District 12. So there's 12 districts altogether. Ominously, there was a 13th, but you have to wait for the next installment when that comes out. So 12 districts in a place called Panem. And it's pretty much North America in the future, or an alternative future, I guess you could say it, an alternate reality, a future which is very dystopical. There's been, for those who don't know, a breakdown in probably through a war, environmental annihilation and, resource breakdown that the populace of the North American region is now called Panem, and Panem is run by a place in the cap called the Capital. Now, the Capital is the Capital, of course, and it's run by some of the wealthiest, most elite people, and pretty much every other 11 of them districts provide resources and foodstuffs, minerals, you name it, human labour for those who are lucky enough to be a capital residents in the capital. All right, so they have what they call a quarter quell. And this is decided because, and this doesn't happen very often, this is decided because it's the 75th annual Hunger Games. And you see, someone's nose is right out of joint. And that, of course, is Snow, played wonderfully by, as I mentioned, played by Donald Sutherland. President Coriolanus Snow. He is not happy. He can see that Katniss and Peter's victory as surviving tributes, because only one person's allowed to survive the Hunger Games, which are a fight to the death and only the best wins. Think Survivor on an extreme scale in an artificial environment that's especially made and designed to basically try to destroy, kill any of the people inside that are sent. And these are teenage kids, adolescents normally, that are sent in to pit themselves against each other to fight to the very end, to the death. Of course, President Snow is in charge of all this. This is his dream baby. And it's a great distraction. He uses it to stop and to quell any sort of uprising or riots or any sort of unpleasantness, like people might rebel. Can't have the populace rebelling. How would the capital run everything? So he can see that Katniss is a great threat to the sort of non-democratic, extremely communistic society, fascist and communist society, that of course is Panem and run by the capital. Sees her as a threat, a symbol of freedom, and that freedom has to be crushed at whatever cost. So that's where we pick up with the second installment, Catching Fire. We see that she's returned back to District 12. It's a coal mining, or very much a mining community. Lots of sooty faces, of course. So the statement here is that they're pretty much slaves to the capital. Grimy, they're poor, they rely on the black market to feed themselves, to make that little bit extra money. And also Katniss, if you don't know the story, she's a huntress. Think of Diana with her bow. She's quite Amazonian, I must admit. And she's certainly athletic and very good at hunting with the bow, any sort of wildlife, which she trades at something called the Hob, which is a place in District 12 where you can trade for different foods, for clothing and other items. So it's illegal to be hunting, but she gets away with it. She is Katniss Everdeen, after all. So we see her return to some sort of normalcy, but she has to live in the Victor's house. And this is like a sort of slightly shambolic kind of mansion, but certainly they're well catered for, even though she looks incongruous because she's in her hunting sort of outfits and kind of thread-worn and worn-out looking clothing, but still living in a sort of a palatial mansion as such in District 12. All tributes who have survived, of course, the Hunger Games that they hold every year, gets to live in a Victory's house or a Victor's house. But of course, she has to go on tour with Peter, and the pretense that they're a couple continues. Now, this is a pretense because there is an inkling of a romance, but her heart belongs to, well, you can name it, obviously the Liam Hemsworth character. Now, we see a bit more of him as Gail Hawthorne, and they've been in a relationship for a very long time, him and Katniss. He calls her Catnip. The thing is, she has this attachment now to Peter Mellark, the fellow victor that she saved, and they became the winners and the victors of the 74th Hunger Games. She has to go on tour with Peter Mellark to prove and to show to all the other 11 districts that everything's great, everything's grand. President Snow is a very kind and warm leader, or you could say dictator or tyrant. And pretty much the Hunger Games is the worst type of celebrity worship. It has a lot of symbolism in the storyline. And Suzanne Collins was trying to make a point when she wrote it back in 2008, or when it was released, the first of the trilogy. She was making a point about what is fascism, communism, what is totalitarianism. And it does come across very strongly with those sort of themes, mixed with dystopical and mixed with poverty and many other things. As she says in a quote, "The novel tackles issues like severe poverty, starvation, oppression, and the effects of war, among others." She also says the Hunger Games series deals with the struggle for self-preservation and for the people of Panem to face and what they have to face in their districts as the Hunger Games become something where they have to participate. So when a person is picked as a tribute, unless somebody else forfeits it, they must enter the Hunger Games. And of course, only one out of 12 will survive. Now, she's a survivor, is Katniss, and they go on the tour, and that's when the trouble starts. There's an uprising. An uprising in one of the districts. And, of course, you can't help but notice that the district does have a lot of people of colour in it. And it's a person of colour, an elderly gentleman, spoiler, who is executed for making a symbolic stand of rebellion. And the stand and symbolic rebellion is he raises his fingers, three fingers in a salute to Katniss. It was Rue's district. And of course, if anyone knows the story, Rue was one of the very young people who was chosen as a tribute for the 74th Hunger Games. And in the first film, it does show her being killed. It is a very, very sad moment when that happens in the first film. And in the book, it's even more graphic and more, you know, pulling at the heartstrings. Yes, this is where the start of a rebellion that's been bubbling for some time under the surface, begins. The man being executed in front of their eyes, and of course things sort of go downhill from there. They have to use their wits, they have to play along with the game, everything is televised to make it look like they're some happy couple. Of course, spoiler, they decide how else to survive and to get President Snow to not wipe them out, but to announce their engagement. And then things go horribly wrong after that. It's almost like cat and mouse. Who's the cat and who's the mouse? President Snow is the cat, or is he the mouse now? Or is it vice versa with Katniss? Because what happens? They now hold the 75th Hunger Games, and it's called a quarter quell. It doesn't happen very often, in fact, hardly at all, where all of the original surviving current victors, or tributes, are put into the Hunger Games to fight against each other. And we're talking in an age range of anything from 70-year-olds, if they're still alive, to people as young as 12 or 14. So you can imagine the terror that strikes the heart of those surviving victors who've been promised that this would never happen in their lifetime. They've been promised an easy enough life. They are always under the microscope, always watched by the media, and every move and everything they do is scrutinized by President Snow, the tyrant. But now he wants revenge. So to wipe out any chance of rebellion or any stand against his tyrannical power, he puts forth that they have a quarter quell and that all surviving victors fight against each other in another Hunger Games, number 75. Alliances are made, betrayal becomes common theme, some of those alliances aren't to be trusted, people are pitted against each other, there's some age differences, which was interesting. Loyalty, trust and friendship is tantamount to survival. I must admit I sat there and I thought, I'm loving this pace. It's fast, it's furious, it's more violent, it sticks closer to the book, although the second book, Catching Fire, is my favourite, I must admit that. And a lot of the issues are tackled and pushed into your face. But that's what we expected in the first one. That didn't happen. Although the ground rules, I guess, were being made, this is definitely a better version. And, you know, it doesn't have that jumpy camera anymore, which is a relief. There's some wonderful fighting scenes and training scenes that involve Katniss as the archer with her bow and arrow. Some very inventive special effects there, but I don't want to spoil it too much. And, of course, a fantastic fighting scene with some very unhappy monkeys. But I think they're baboons. But anyway, enough of that. You need to see the film to see what I mean. So that's Catching Fire, the second installment of The Hunger Games, the trilogy. Now, of course, the first book came out in 2008 through Scholastic Books. Catching Fire in 2009. And the next one we can expect, the next film, is Mockingjay, 2010. Now, if you don't know what a Mockingjay is, get to your search engine and find out. We'll put links, obviously, with this podcast review. I enjoyed it. I think this one will be the standout. I expect it will do very, very well. And Gina Maloney almost steals the scenes away from Jennifer Lawrence, which was amazing. As Joanna, she's feisty. You don't know what side she's on. There's a lot more in the book about her, of course. So there's some troubling issues there. And there's some, I guess you could say she's like an antithesis to Katniss Everdeen. I'm giving it a 3.5 out of 5. Like I said, it's going to be everywhere from November the 21st through Roadshow Entertainment Australia. So this is Sonia signing off with another film review, especially for Sci-Fi and Scream, only on Jaw 94.9. And that was Catching Fire.
So you can fully perceive the brightness of the light. Join us on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.